Larry, Maui's longest talk show. I always love being able to talk to wonderful guests on the show, and I'm really honored to have a great person who I've never talked to before calling in. As you might have heard, Spyro Gyra's going to be playing on Sunday at the Max Castle Theater. And you can get tickets for that either by calling 242-SHOW or going to MauiArts.org. And on the phone with me right now is Jay Beckenstein, who is one of the original founders of Spyro Gyra. It's really a pleasure talking with you. Good having you on the line here, Jay. How you doing today?
Thank you, Cindy.
How's everything
going? Pleasure talking to you.
Where are you based out of? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from about 30 miles outside of New York.
Oh, all the way on the East Coast. I didn't know that. Do you live out there?
I do. I've always been living in the New York area.
Well, you started in Buffalo, didn't you, way back when?
Yeah, I went to school in Buffalo. Actually, I guess I lived in Buffalo 8 years, four of which I went to school. But when things started going well for the band, I had to get the band to, at the time it was New York, L.A., or Nashville, somewhere where there was a lot of heat musically. So we went to New York.
Yeah, well, that's a good music scene for sure. My gosh, and there was a lot of good jazz, and you had probably some very important jazz influences that happened there. When you think of all the good jazz that's happened in New York, and jazz and blues, of course, but I think the jazz was pretty amazing.
I my father was a total lover of jazz.
Oh, so, I didn't know that.
And I'm going to date myself here. I grew up in the 50s as my dad was himself discovering Charlie Parker and Sonny Rollins and Cannonball Adderley and Miles Davis, and kind of tucked under his arm, he got me into all that music at a super young age. Oh. And later on when I needed resources in my head to come up with my own sounds and things, that was one of the pillars of what I fell back on, was all that great music he turned me on to in the 50s and early 60s.
Well, I was in L.A. at that time, and I used to go to the Baked Potato and Shelley's Manhole, and I saw Cannonball Adderley at a little club, Mercy, and oh my gosh, I'll never forget him playing Mercy, Mercy Me. Some great stuff, right? Thank God for those
Cannonball
roots.
I heard Cannonball live, too.
It was amazing.
I got to meet him as a little kid.
Wow.
And he was a very... He was a very warm man. At least that was my impression when I met him.
So when you were starting with Spyro Gyra, I mean, we were talking a little early before we were on the air about formatting and labeling that happens with record companies and radio stations. I was blessed to be able to do radio in Los Angeles when it was totally free format, and later on at my own station in Northern California, where we'd play jazz and mix it in with reggae and everything else. So we didn't do that. But then there was this kind of smooth jazz thing that happened, and I know there was the Wave and some other that kind of got syndicated and everything. Your kind of music was happening a little before all that was labeled. You were just playing good music, but it was really kind of new age. But that's before new age had a format label, right?
Well, it was very hard to label us right from the start, because we were doing music that had some Latin elements. We were doing some music that had Brazilian elements. We were doing some music that was kind of, atmospheric, that you might have said, okay, that's a proto smooth jazz. But that was only like, one eighth of what we were putting out there. We felt we were putting out very adventurous music at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And so the smooth jazz thing hit us later on. We were about 8 years into our career. We had already sold millions of records. We had a very strong identity and couldn't be pushed around. But when Kenny G had a huge success,
yep.
I mean, it was massive, 11 million records or something.
Mm-hmm.
Every single record label wanted to repeat that success.
You're right.
And right about that time, a group of people started a number of radio stations that based what they played on group testing. The testing itself was quite interesting. Sometimes they'd only play 8 seconds of something, and positive or negative. And so they started producing this very homogeneous radio sound.
Yeah.
And at the time, it was new. You know, Chardet sounded cool.
Yeah, they'd mix in the Police sometimes, and sometimes they did have some, you know, nice, good stuff like David Sanborn.
Yeah, yeah.
Added people like Weather Report, because that may have been too extreme for that format, right?
No, there was no Weather Report. There was no Miles.
Mm-hmm.
I think they really did want, in so many ways, what smooth jazz, at least what it became, was sort of instrumental, laid-back R&B.
Or new-age elevator music, kind of.
Oh, well, elevator music is too insulting. I never insult my fellow musicians with such a thing.
No. But it was kind of a hipper.
Instrumental gospel music. So a lot of it came from, repackaging soul hits and Motown hits. And at its best, it's kind of rock and R&B in an instrumental way. And at its worst, it's that word you use.
Well, you know, you think about people that were in the Roots time with you, like Chuck Mangione kind of was in the beginning stages there doing his thing. And of course, later was Kenny G. I think Chuck was before Kenny G.
If you want the great prototypical guy, I mean, the guy that everybody copied and did the smooth jazz thing before there was ever smooth jazz, it was Benson.
Yes, you're right. Absolutely. George Benson. I remember seeing him, oh my gosh, at the Amundsen Theater in Los Angeles years ago, and he just blew me away. Wes Montgomery around that time. Some of the greats.
George Benson did that. Another group that did it at the same time was the Jazz Crusaders.
You're right. Oh, my gosh.
And the Crusaders.
Yep.
They shifted gears into this R&B world and away from the jazz world. And Benson did it, too. But Benson was such an awesome player.
Absolutely.
That an album like Breezin', which I think is, you know, when they say what started smooth jazz.
Yeah.
I go, listen to Breezin'.
So you've put out all these amazing albums since the early days. I mean, you know, and so now you have a huge library to pull from. But Morning Dance, your first CD, really still is super popular, which is amazing. You think going back to 1979 when you put that out. So when you get a concert like you're going to be doing this Sunday at the Mac, do you have a set format list, and do you know what you're going to play, and do you try to merge a little bit of everything with it?
Yeah, and also because the presentation we make is, it's not me up front with a backup band in any way. There's also a real focus on every member of the band having some of their material played, and every member of the band having some space where they can do whatever they want to show, whatever it is they want to show.
Do you have space for improvisations at this point in shows? Do you let people do solos and stretch out?
Yeah. We're a very fluid band. We've done this for so long that there's no counting of any solo length.
Mm-hmm.
You play as long as you want.
Good.
And then everybody in the band knows exactly how you wiggle your butt when you want to get out of it.
Right.
I mean, we're on to each other in a big way.
Yeah, we're lucky enough here that we have some great musicians living on the island, but every now and then we get, you know, Carlos Santana is one of the people that lives here, and he'll play a concert here. He can't even do it every year. He's on the road so much, but it's so nice to see him, and of course his wife is a great drummer, and it's beautiful to see how they can stretch out and still kind of merge together and let everyone do their own thing. And of course, talk about Latin groove. They've got the Latin groove and guitar down.
Well, Carlos is the and there's, you know, there's another one from the same time. You know, you pointed out that I had jazz influences. Well, I also came of musical age in the time of Earth, Wind, and Fire, and I mean, all these amazing bands and groups that were hitting it in the early 70s. So, and Weather Report, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But when Spyro finally started putting material together, there was a melding of, you know, a degree of pop and R&B with all this Latin jazz and this and that. We were definitely into backbeats as opposed to swing beats.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these days it's probably still pretty much the same. 80% is going to be going to have a Latin or a funk feel.
The thing I love about your music is it really makes me feel good, and it lifts my spirits, and it's up music. It's just, it's up music. That's, you know, and
I think you'll get that live. I promise you, because part of the live thing is that we really like each other, and we're really, you know, when we're laughing on stage, we're enjoying ourselves, and that's part of that feeling that the experience is one of festival, of happiness, of a party, and yet we really do play music that has some serious edges and some challenges for the listener.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think our audiences here on Maui are pretty sophisticated. You know, it's funny because a lot of us are people who came to get away from the rush and the hustle and the bustle, but there's certainly people here that are wonderful music lovers and have listened to music like yours and many other people's who are really good with a rock and roll, jazz, or R&B. And even there's a good blues community here, too. So, of course, a lot of Hawaiian people like Hawaiian music, and that crosses all boundaries. But I think Maui has some of the best musicians of any of the islands here. And it's part of it is that there's this creative spirit here. And the beauty, of course. The beauty is, I think, very conducive to inspiration. So I know that people are going to really be very excited to be able to hear you play, and especially at the wonderful location like the Mac, you know.
We're genuinely thrilled. And, you know, after Maui, we're on Oahu for, I think, 6 nights.
Wow.
At the Blue Note there. So
really?
Although we're playing every night a couple of shows, we will have some daytime. It won't be on Maui, but it'll still be nice.
That's a lot of shows on Oahu. That's a lot.
Yeah, but, you know, the place isn't that big.
No, no.
Maybe 300, so that would be 600 a night for 5 nights, whatever.
Excellent.
It is.
Wow. Do you get your CDs for sale on the tours, or is that too much to get? Are you going to be having some of your product for sale?
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
But I may be speaking out of turn.
Yeah.
I'm not the one that carries that. My manager carries that.
Uh-huh.
But considering we're going to be at a really nice club in Waikiki for 5 days, I think it would be silly not to bring something.
Well, I know you're not going to have a lot of time here, but I sure hope you enjoy the time you do have here. And you picked the right week. The hurricanes didn't happen, and they moved on. And so you're picking a nice time for people to come enjoy your music. And we're looking forward to seeing you on Sunday at the Mac. Spyro Gyra.
We are also looking forward to it. But I got to say, it's a tease. One day on Maui?
Yeah.
That's a tease.
Yeah.
What are we to do? It seems like we just did one day in Korea, too.
Did you do one day in Korea? South Korea, I assume.
Yes, we did. Well, 2 days of travel, one show.
Wow.
Days of travel back.
How was the audience
we're headed west again.
Are you? Yeah. So that's good that you get to play there. It's wonderful that you're on the road and letting people hear your great music. And I really appreciate you taking the time. where you are. It's nighttime already. Thank you, Jay Beckenstein, so much for taking the time to call in and have a wonderful time while here in the islands, okay?
Mahalo.